States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 96. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's program, Sue Malone Casey has a tip on the walk, and we're also going to be hearing about Colonel Hiram Tuttle as part of our series, remembering the Rimmer Foundation USDF Hall of Fame inductees. But first, a message for members. As part of the USDF's ongoing effort to educate members, we've created a place for members to review active rule change proposals that affect dressage. On the USDF main webpage, you can click on the blue USDF Rule Change Proposals button for more information, to provide feedback, and to review active rule change proposals and new rules. Check back with us for a future podcast where USDF Registered Technical Delegate and USDF Dressage Committee Co-Chair Lisa Goretta will be joining us to discuss the proposed rules and the rule change process. The rule change proposals will also be discussed at the 2015 Adequan USDF Annual Convention during the USEF Rule Change Forum. All USDF members and convention attendees are encouraged to attend the USEF Rule Change Forum to discuss the proposed changes and provide feedback. Please visit the USDF website for the detailed schedule of meetings and events that will be held during this year's Adequan USDF Annual Convention. And now, Colonel Hiram Tuttle is remembered in our series on USDF American Legends. Colonel Hiram Tuttle was inducted into the Rimmer Foundation USDF Hall of Fame in 2002 in recognition of his seminal contributions as a cavalry officer to the development of dressage in the United States. He was the first American to embrace dressage as his chosen equestrian discipline and also trained all of his own horses. Colonel Tuttle is the only U.S. rider to win an individual medal in dressage at the Olympic Games in 1932. He trained his student, Lieutenant Robert Borg, who earned a team silver medal at the Olympics, the highest placing by a U.S. dressage team. Hiram Tuttle had a true love for his horses, unusual in an era and a profession in which most mounts were assigned, not chosen, and in which few cavalrymen owned their own horses. Something about dressage appealed to him and made him and his horsemanship stand apart from his fellow officers. It appears that Tuttle chose dressage for personal reasons, not professional, the reason why most of us choose dressage. Tuttle was a practicing attorney when he joined the army as part of its emergency expansion before World War I. In his day, he was the army's lone dressage enthusiast who did not fit the cavalry mold. Older than his Olympic teammates, Colonel Tuttle developed a passion for dressage when almost no one in the US had ever heard the word. Despite the lack of qualified dressage instructors, he somehow managed to teach himself the fine points of classical horsemanship and went on to become this country's foremost dressage rider. He played a major role in the Army teams winning the team dressage bronze medal in the 1932 Olympics in Los Angeles, America's first medal in Olympic dressage, and also claimed the individual bronze medal aboard his horse, appropriately named Olympic, in the highest ever individual placing in American Olympic dressage history. When you consider all of the wonderful riders and horses the U.S. has produced, from Hilda Gurney and Keane, Carol Lavelle and Gifted, to Michael Poulin, Gunter Seidel and Graf George, it is quite a testament to Tuttle's skill. Colonel Tuttle did so much with so little and was so little appreciated. He was the only officer to focus strictly on dressage. Everyone else in the army world, which in those days meant in America, who did dressage, learned what to do and how to do it from him. They also learned from Tuttle's horses, which he owned privately, so that he could school them as he pleased and use them strictly for dressage without the all-round demands that were being placed on the cavalry-owned mounts. Two of Tuttle's self-trained horses, Olympic and Cy Murray, competed on the 1936 U.S. Army dressage team. In some ways, Tuttle was the Rodney Dangerfield character among the cavalry officers. He didn't get much respect. Part of the reason was that most army riders had little use for dressage's discipline, formality, and lack of excitement. Tuttle also contributed to the development of dressage by training a protege in Lieutenant Robert Borg, who won team silver medal, the highest placing by a U.S. dressage team in Olympic history, and finished fourth individually at the 1948 London Olympic Games. Borg was also the highest-placed rider on the 1952 U.S. Olympic dressage team. Tuttle continued to ride and care for his horses after he retired from the military, and he never sold any of his mounts. He died in 1956 at the age of 73 and was buried in the cemetery at Fort Riley, also the final resting place for his horses, Vast, Cy Murray, and Olympic. And now to our training tip this week. USEF Senior Dressage Judge Sue Malone Casey is here to talk about the walk. Sue, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Chris. How are you doing?
It's nice to have you join us here. This is, I think, your first time on the podcast.
Yes, it is. I'm really pleased to have a chance to comment on the walk and dressage. I know it's not always so exciting as piaffe, dressage, and flying changes, but I believe that if riders really have a true connection with their horse and practice this connection and the correct responses, that they can, through the walk, understand what the connection should be throughout the training. I have spent some time looking at the rules from the United States Equestrian Federation's rules, and I would really suggest that people look up the rules under the USEF site. It's dressage rules, and for the walk, it's Rule 103. And the first issue I'd like to address is the concept of relaxation in the walk, especially between the medium walk and the free walk. Relaxation in the horse really has nothing to do with limpness or sluggishness. It has everything to do with the connection between the hind legs of the horse and their reach into the reins. And there should be no interruption, no tension in the loins, the back, the neck, the jaw, or the mouth, but rather tone, the kind of tone of a fit athlete, especially in the abs of the horse, so that they can use those abs to support their back, and also the rider, who should be also fit and in tone, good tone. I like to talk about the free walk as in relationship to the medium walk. Most of the walks that I see in dressage tests in the medium walks are actually quite good. Sometimes, though, people don't realize that the medium walk in the definition says that there should be moderate lengthening with the hind feet touching ground in front of the hoof print of the front feet. So, and it's even, this is at the beginning levels for the USDF tests for our United States. And so I see good medium walks, but when it comes to free walks, which I feel is the beginning of teaching the horse collected walk and extended walk, particularly, they really don't have the concept of what it should be. I see the rider give the reins, and what should happen is that the horse should step out to the reins as the rider gives the reins. But most of the time, what I see is that the walk just loses the energy that has been in the medium walk loses the spread of the rib cage, loses the flexing of the back, the elasticity of the back, and the suppleness that we see in, throughout the whole horse. And that's the first thing that we're trying to teach the horse, is the longitudinal connection, or in another word, an extension. Now, the free walk is not an extension, but what it should be is the horse reaching out and showing off his largest walk. And most of the times what I see is the rider gives the reins, and then the reins become loopy, and then there's no swinging in the back, and especially no march, which is mentioned in the actual definition of walk. It says that the walk is a marching gait, and so I rarely see a march. The walk, when the reins get sloppy, has become pokey, and the horse has backed out of the contact and let his hind legs become lazy. When the next thing that I see after the horse has made this sort of slow walk across the arena is that the rider goes ahead and takes up the reins towards the end, and they're taking him up from floppy reins. And at this point, the horse sometimes jogs because he's anticipating that connection and the energy in the medium walk, and the rider hasn't told him any different. So what I like to suggest to riders is that they use their seat to ask the horse to come back to them, and then take up the reins that the horse gives them, and then they won't have so much of a hard time with the horse anticipating the medium walk and trying to put more energy into the walk than the rider is expecting. Another problem that I see is that people have not practiced this movement very much at home. And it's something that they can do in their warm-up and just practice the medium walk to the free walk and then back to the medium walk, and also at the end of their ride when they're cooling down the horse. There's we have precious little time on the horse, and so we should utilize all those moments. Also, sometimes the training has not gone along the correct track, and what's happened is the rider feels the horse start to get sluggish and may add more leg or more seat and maybe even kick the horse, and the horse jogs. And unfortunately, what happens is that most riders pull the horse back to a walk. Unfortunately, this is conceptually for the horse not the right thing to do. What he has done is he has changed subjects by changing gates. And he has tried to take the rider out of what is the most important part of the walk, the forwardness of the walk. And what the horse has done is says, okay, I'll change gates. The rider pulls him back, and then the rider gets this even smaller walk. And what they should do is impress upon the horse that the rider had asked for forward. So we go in whatever gait the horse chooses. because it's not about the gate, really. The horse has tried to change subjects and make it about the gate, but it's not. It's about the forward. And all he's done is change dates and gone nowhere in another gate. So my suggestion is, if the horse picks the trot to move into when you ask him to go forward, then say, well, if you want to trot, fine, but you have to go forward in the trot, not this jigging kind of thing. And then reestablish the connection, you put the horse back on the bit at the trot, and then come back to the medium walk, and then immediately go back to asking the horse for the free walk and asking him to move out again. And after three or four times, generally three, the horses get the idea that it's going to be harder work if they jog, because then they're going to really have to trot forward, connected on the bit, and then do more transitions. So they're quick learners, and they work best that way. And what happens if you don't do that, then you get the rider gets caught between a rock and a hard place. The rock being the horse not moving forward in the free walk, and the hard place being the horse losing the rhythm of the walk while you're pushing. And so you don't have any options left to you. So that's what I suggest for working with that. I think that's probably about most of what I have to say about the walk, the medium walk, and the free walk. To just really try to work on that and carry that concept through the rest of the gate.
And our thanks again to Sue Malone Casey for this week's tip. You can find more educational resources on the website at USDF by following the link to eTrack. And whilst you're on the website, be sure to check out all the latest information regarding meetings and education sessions that will be held during the 2015 Adequan USDF Annual Convention. Just click on the link at usdf.org for convention. And that's it for this week's episode. Don't forget you can download this podcast from the iTunes Podcast Store to any podcast app, so you can listen to the show on the go as well as on the website. Until next week, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.